Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. There's JJ. Let's get started with one of the most gruesome things that has ever happened in the history of the world.
Yeah, and probably the most gruesome thing that's ever happened on this show.
Yeah, I don't think there's a probably about it. Oh, and we've talked about some gruesome stuff, but we should probably give a little COA here. Like, the stuff we're going to talk about is kind of graphic, of people dying and being mutilated. So just heads up on that one.
Yep, I just looked at the pic. Thank you.
Yes, anytime. I can't believe you hadn't so far.
Yeah, I avoided it. So until
you
said...
see the full color one? Is that the one you looked at just now?
You're talking about the tray of...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So everyone knows what we're talking about. There was, and still is, it sounds like, a drilling rig called the Biford Dolphin. Mm-hmm. Now it looks like it's contracted out by BP.
I think so.
And on November 5th, 1983, there was, in the North Sea, a very horrific accident, an explosive decompression accident that occurred on the Biford Dolphin. Or not on the Biford Dolphin, but very far under the sea.
No, it was on the Biford Dolphin.
But does that mean, I thought this happened below deck.
Let me take this. You ready?
All right, good night.
So the whole thing centers around saturation diving.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay. So, well, let's explain to the peeps at home what saturation diving is then, okay?
It means you can live down there, basically, and work.
Yeah, so like if you're working on the Biford Dolphin, you could be drilling into... you know, thousands of feet of bedrock under the sea to get to whatever gas or oil you're after. And so you might be working hundreds and hundreds of feet down every day, which means that when you come back up, as if you listen to our cave diving episode, you got to decompress.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to decompress, that takes time. So that means that, you know, it could take hours and hours every day after your shift to decompress before you can finally come up to the surface. So since that's just so ridiculously inefficient, they've come up with this thing called saturation diving, which kind of gets around decompressing every day.
Yeah, plus you got to keep them on the clock, you know, while you're decompressing.
You got to pay for the decompressing, yeah.
All right, so the way I understand it is they, like you said, it's more efficient to stay down there and work,
mm-hmm.
which they do, but they don't live down there necessarily, like in the abyss.
Right.
They come back up to the ship, but the whole journey from seafloor to ship is pressurized at the same pressure. Is that right?
It is. And then once they get to the ship, they have to live and stay in these pressurized environments so that they don't have to decompress every day. So
gotcha.
They're working down on the seafloor, and then they're living on the ship, and then they're traveling between the two in a pressurized diving bell. But the point is everywhere they are for weeks on end during their shift or their stint or hitch, that's what they call it, their hitch of working the seafloor, they're living in this pressurized environment, whether it's on the ship, in the diving bell, or down on the seafloor. It's all pressurized to the atmosphere, the atmospheric pressure of the work site down on the seafloor.
Okay, this makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
I was under the impression it was like the abyss.
Right.
And they all just lived down there and played cards and made pithy remarks and complained about the food.
It was a good movie, though.
It was a great movie. So this does make a lot more sense. So basically, the hatches of the diving bell and the ship chamber are all lined up and clamped together
mm-hmm.
by these divers that are on the outside.
Dive tenders.
Yeah, dive tenders. And that's where it becomes a little bit like a movie. You move from one to one and mm-hmm. then make sure everything is super tightly clamped together, obviously, because it's all super pressurized.
Yeah, and to like hook the diving bell up to the pressure chambers where they like live and eat and play cards and give pithy remarks to one another
right.
on the ship. that's all pressurized as if it's, you know, at 9 atmospheres down on the sea floor, even though outside of those chambers on the ship, it's at 1 atmosphere. It's at sea level pressure.
Yeah,
right?
You can't just pop out and have a smoke.
No, you cannot. You have to stay in what is that gerbil habitat called? You know what I'm talking about?
Sort of.
You can put like a bunch of tubing and stuff together and let your gerbil run around.
Yeah.
So this is basically what these divers lived in, and it was all pressurized. And so when you're traveling from, you know, the seafloor up to the chambers on the ship in this diving bell, and you clamp the diving bell onto the pressurized chamber, you need to make sure that the tunnel that connects the two is pressurized, and then you can open up the hatch and then move into the chamber, shut the hatch, depressurize that little tunnel, and then remove the diving bell, and you're fine. It's just a lot of extra work and thoughtfulness to live like this for weeks on end for saturation diving, but it means that you only have to decompress once at the end of this several-week hitch before you go out into sea-level atmosphere.
Right, and given what's going on, you would think that there is a robust system of fail-safes
right.
and check marks and hand signals to make sure that everything is hooked up
yeah.
and sealed tight in order to maintain that pressure.
And today you'd be right, but in 1983, not necessarily.
That's right. So we're going to take a break and tell you what happened on November 5th of that year right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, so here's what happened on November 5th. There was a team of four divers down there working in the Frigg gas field in the North Sea.
Mm-hmm.
There were two divers in a bell, and that's, we talked about, I think we did a whole podcast on a diving bell, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We totally did, which is kind of weird to think of. But yeah, I remember because remember that one cook on that ship from Nigeria that went down? He managed to like live in like a little air pocket a couple days.
Yeah. So the diving bell is the chamber that takes people back and forth. It's the taxi, basically.
Right.
Transporting them from the work site back up to these pressurized chambers on the ship.
Right.
It had just been cranked up to the surface. And they were crawling through this passageway, it's called a trunk, to this attached sealed decompression chamber.
Which is where they lived and worked and or lived and ate and made pithy jokes.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't forget the cards.
Right, the cards.
And you got to complain about the cooking.
Sure.
And then there was a chamber, another chamber, pretty similar nearby, that had two more of the diving team.
Mm-hmm.
And then each of these chambers, this trunk, the bell, and the chamber were all completely pressurized. And again, the system was in place and it had worked pretty well up until this point.
Yeah, but for some reason, on this particular day, one of the two dive tenders, one of the divers who were outside in the normal pressure atmosphere outside of this pressurized chamber, their job was to assist in making sure the diving bell was clamped up to the trunk correctly and opening and closing the valves and stuff like that. One of them unclamped the diving bell from the trunk before the hatch had been shut.
Yeah.
Closing off the divers in their quarters, their pressurized quarters. This was catastrophic. What it did was it introduced the normal one atmosphere of atmospheric pressure into the pressurized dive chambers, which were pressurized to 9 atmospheres. And in a fraction of a second, the pressure inside of these things went from an extremely compressed 9 atmospheres to an extremely decompressed 1 atmosphere. Again, in less than a second. And it was again, catastrophic is the only way to put it.
Yeah, this is something that they would take 9, 10, 11, 12 hours to decompress usually.
Yes.
And it happened in under a second.
Yes.
It caused an explosion, a decompression explosion, killed all 4 of these divers and the dive tender immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They did a follow-up study, of course, in 1988. They found that the 3 of the divers were literally killed instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we need to say this, right?
Yeah.
So the diver, their bodies ruptured, basically. The diver closest to the door, his organs, spine, and limbs, it said, were ejected, and his remains exploded through a narrow gap in that chamber door.
Yeah, before this happened so fast, and he was pulled apart so violently, that before that chamber door that he hadn't gotten shut yet could slam shut,
mm-hmm.
about half of him shot out in a burst of like blood and gore through that narrow opening as the hatch door was slamming shut from the pressure.
Yeah, they said that they found his liver on the deck of the boat, quote, complete as if dissected out of the body, end quote.
Right, and so they think what happened, so the other 3, they all died instantly, but the other 3, their bodies were intact, but what had happened is their organs and their blood vessels had all ruptured because the gases that were dissolved in their blood at that moment suddenly just expanded and just burst everything inside of them. But the guy who was pulled apart exploded so violently because he was the closest to that pressure gradient in between 1 atmosphere and 9 atmosphere. And he was pulled apart by that pressure gradient. Like part of him was a little further away from the door than the rest of him. And that difference was enough to just be pulled apart by this explosion.
Yeah. The only thing that I can say that is good about this was that it was so fast.
Yeah.
There was not even a moment of panic of what just happened.
Right.
There was no fear even, much less pain.
Right.
It was just you're going back into the chamber and all of a sudden you wake up sitting on a cloud going, what just happened?
Where'd I get this loot?
Yeah, basically.
Or harp. It's a harp.
At least it was that fast that there certainly was no pain involved, but also no fear or anything. It was just lights out.
Right. And so you might think like, well, wait a minute. How did this guy even begin to get this clamp open that allowed the pressurized chamber to depressurize catastrophically? Well, that's what a lot of people said afterwards. And so the Norwegian Oil Directorate and the regulations body Norsk Veritas basically said, this can never happen again. If you have an old saturation diving system set up, you have to retrofit it following these new specifications that make it this impossible. Like you couldn't possibly open a clamp before the trunk has been depressurized, before the hatch has been shut, before all this stuff happens, so that it's an actual fail safe.
Yeah, and the thinking all along was that it was a human error. That's what the report said. Fatigue or just, you know, somebody made a mistake. But it seems like years later, some of these relatives of the gentlemen that were killed
mm-hmm.
got their hands on a report that said it was actually faulty equipment.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. And where did this come from? Who do we have to thank for this?
We got a lot of people to thank. Everybody from History Channel to, there was a guy on Reddit actually named Spectromero who did a great job of explaining saturation diving in this particular accident. So
nice.
got a handful of people to thank for this one.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, terrible stuff, but
right.
Interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. There you go, Chuck. I think you saved us at the last minute. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. We hope that you can carry on the rest of the day without shuddering. Good luck. In the meantime, Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.